Chapter 35. Living Siege Tower. Sabé didn't wait around for the spell to land. Nor did she wait around to figure out how, exactly, the Havarthi had seen through the attention ward around her. Instead, she pulled together wind armor faster than she ever had before, and detonated all of it at once. Straight down against the tower. As Sabé passed up out-of-fused momentum magnifier ward, she accelerated so hard she actually felt her eyes pressing back against her sockets, and her vision started to spot over. Below her, she could hear an eruption of sound as the lava bomb hammered into the tower. She barely kept herself from falling into a tumble in mid-air and losing control. Instead, she somehow managed to spin up a new set of wind armor. As she slowed and reached the top of her ascent, Sabé found herself higher in the air than she'd ever been on her own. She could see the spire she'd just escaped, crumbling down to the plaza containing the exile splinter. She could see a truly stunning array of Havarthi spells, tearing apart huge chunks of the city around it. She could see the entirety of Imperial Ithos spread out below her, on a scale that dwarfed even Ras Andis and Theras Tel. Something seemed odd about the layout of the canals to her, but she couldn't tell what. She could see the edges of Lake Nilu, which made the city itself seem small. Then, as she reached the top of her arc and began to fall, she said something that in retrospect she was fairly sure Talia would also be angry about. How can this day get any worse? Then she looked up, and in the distance, rapidly bearing down on Lake Nilu from the west, she saw something that unfortunately was not Kandaron. Something she hadn't noticed at first from the sheer shock of the living tower. It was one of her grandmother's storms. Hugh crashed into the hard cobblestones of the walkway, almost rolling all the way into the canal from how hard Godric had thrown him. Hugh's floating quartz crystal somehow managed to impact his shoulder hard enough to leave a bruise, as did his spellbook as he rolled over it. He frantically turned over to look for Godric, only to spot him staggering out of the collapsing palace, his magic the only thing still holding up the doorway. The instant Godric was out, it collapsed in a cloud of dust and debris.
"I think the plan might have gone a bit sideways," Godric said, then started coughing.
"I think you're right," Hugh said, looking around. He couldn't see Alustin and Talia's position from where they were at, but Sabé's tower was simply gone. He hoped she'd made it out safely. Almost reflexively, Hugh started building a protective ward around the two of them. Godric, meanwhile, was already constructing his stone armor and putting the quartz faceplate into place.
"Which way should we go?" Hugh asked. "I think we need to get to cover and regroup," Godric said. "Then figure out some way to take down that tower."
"Works for me," Hugh said.
"I..."
He was interrupted by a crack against his ward from something striking it. Seconds later, a tree was rearing up from the canal next to them, its branches reaching for his ward.
"We should run now," Hugh said.
Another arrow impacted the ward, this one already sprouting roots. The first tree was already pressing its branches against his ward, and Hugh could feel it wavering.
"Where?" Godric asked. "We'll have trees growing out of us, no matter which direction we go."
"Not quite," Hugh said, then glanced down.
"I hate this plan already," Godric said. "On three?"
Hugh's ward started to flicker.
"Nope," Hugh said. "Now!"
The walkway beneath them crumbled apart between the combined power of their spells, plunging the two of them into the lake below them. Hugh would just be exposing them to arrows if he hit them with a levitation spell. So instead, Hugh improvised a crystal spell form that pushed the falling rocks away from them so they wouldn't be injured by them. Godric apparently had the same thought, because they went firing away with astonishing speed. One tore through the trunk of one of the new trees, while several more tore through nearby walls and columns. They plunged into the water of Lake Nilu, and Hugh immediately dove down and swam away from the canal. When his breath was about to give out, he surfaced, finding himself in the dim space between one of the palaces of Imperial Ithos, floating between the columns supporting it. Fairly close by, he could see where the collapsing palace had punched through the foundation and down into the lake. Godric didn't surface at first, and Hugh started to panic, thinking that Godric hadn't gotten his stone armor off in time. Then Godric bobbed to the surface a few feet away, armor still on him. The fact that it was floating probably had to do with the fact that most of the armor was ice, with a few patches of stone mixed in. Godric held Hellstrike in one hand. The whole palace above them shuddered. Hugh reached up with his crystal affinity sense, but the stone above them still seemed intact enough.
"I've got an idea,"
Godric said through his faceplate, and touched the striking face of Hailstrike against the water. A flow of ice immediately began to grow around it.
"Are we making a boat?" Hugh asked.
"Not exactly,"
Godric said, then explained his plan.
"Well, that's insane," Hugh said. "I'm all in."
Talia shielded her head with her hands, not that it would do anything to protect her from the toppling monolith. Only it never struck. She looked up cautiously, only to see the massive stone monument suspended no more than 10 feet above her head. A series of white columns stretched between the cobblestones and the monolith. Talia blinked in shock when she realized that they were made of paper.
"When it comes to paper," Alustin said, "it really is all about how you fold it."
She just glowered at her teacher's obnoxious smirk until she felt the cobblestones shifting under her feet.
"Though on second thought, we should probably move," Alustin said.
They'd sprinted out 20 feet from underneath the monolith by the time the cobblestones buckled and the monolith collapsed. It punched through the courtyard entirely, plummeting down into the lake below. The impact threw both Alustin and Talia off their feet. Alustin fell into a graceful roll and sprang right back to his feet. Talia, meanwhile, crashed hard against the stone, leaving her with a lot of cuts and soon-to-be bruises. She was still climbing back to her feet when a fireball detonated a short distance away. She looked up to see at least a half dozen more heading straight towards them from the living Havarthi Tower, as well as several arrows, a slow-flying snake made out of fiery ash, some sort of web of wires, and several more magical attacks she couldn't identify. Not a one of them hit. They were all simply deflected in mid-air by a ward. Not one of Hugh's wards, but a great floating circle of paper nearly 50 feet across. Fireballs bounced off to crash into canals in an explosion of steam. The wire net simply fell harmlessly to the ground, and the arrow deflected to start growing into a full tree on a nearby bridge. Grovebringer. And then Alustin counterattacked. Hundreds of glyph-marked sheets of paper arced towards the tower. Most were deflected by other attacks or by magical defences. The living tower appeared to have wards of its own woven out of vines, but they were taking a serious pounding from Alustin's exploding sheets of paper. At the same time, Alustin was covering himself in what looked like spell-form-encrusted full plate made entirely of paper. Talia had never seen another mage channel so many spells at once. It was absolutely absurd.
"You could be helping, you know," Alustin said. "That ward's one way. It's not blocking your shots."
"My dream firebolts can't travel that far," Talia said. "I'm not exactly the longest range battle mage out there. I'm definitely more of a middle distance attacker. Unless, of course, you'd like me to use a siege spell right now."
"Dream firebolts, no. But did you really think your fine magical control was the only reason I helped you develop dream wasps?" Alustin said.
Talia gave him a hesitant look,
then manifested a dream wasp. The green-purple spark hovered over her hand for a moment, then she launched it towards the living tower. She was convinced it would go out before it made it a third of the way there, but it took almost no mental effort at all to maintain it all the way to the living tower, where it splattered harmlessly against the wards. Or, perhaps not harmlessly. She could swear she detected an odd crunching feeling as the dream wasp impacted the wards, as though it had taken a tiny bite out of them.
"And how many dream wasps were you successfully manifesting at once before?"
Alustin asked. A wicked smile crept across Talia's face as dozens of dream wasps began manifesting in front of her. Then they exploded forwards. The swarm of dream wasps impacted a fireball first, which simply froze. It tumbled to the ground and shattered like ice across one of Ithos's bridges. The swarm was diminished but hardly quenched by that, and slammed through another of Grovebringer's arrows. It sprouted into a tree in midair, but the tree was visibly rotting and tore apart into sawdust when it impacted Alustin's ward. Finally, they impacted the slow-flying ash snake, burning away a large amount of its mass, though it reformed itself and kept flying towards them. Talia began manifesting another swarm.
"You really don't need gaps in between manifesting dream wasps," Alustin said. "You should be more than capable of manifesting them continuously."
Talia frowned at him, then tried it. Most of the dream wasps flew off course or extinguished at first, but within a few breaths, Talia had a thin but continuous stream of dream wasps flying forwards. Most impacted enemy spells, but a few started consistently making it through to the enemy wards. And it was hardly using any of her mana.
"Not bad, Talia," Alustin said. "Dream fire, even in small amounts, should wear down their wards quickly. It's hard to ward against something so erratic."
She glanced at the hundreds of sheets of paper intercepting enemy spells or detonating against the living tower, then scowled.
"Screw small amounts," Talia said.
The stream of dream wasps began to swell, the numbers of the dream wasps doubling, then tripling. Talia began to laugh. Though if you asked anyone else, they'd probably describe it as a maniacal cackle. Sabe was, to say the least, in an awkward position. She couldn't actually fly after all, so she couldn't stay up in the air. And considering the massive bombardment of spells coming from the tower, she didn't want to try to land somewhere near it, nor did she think she could successfully make it outside the range of the bombardment. So she had, well, decided to land on top of the roof of the living tower. She'd expected the vines and trees of the tower to immediately grab at her, but to her shock, she seemed to have landed unnoticed. She didn't try to take immediate advantage of that fact, however. Instead, she took a long moment to look around. The bombardment was focusing especially hard on areas Sabe knew Hugh had built attention wards in. She didn't know how the Havarthi were spotting them, but they hadn't actually seen through them, or they would have just targeted the ones protecting the Skyhold party. Instead, they were indiscriminately firing spells at any attention ward in range. There were already a shocking number of new trees sprouting across the city from Grovebringer's arrows, and great chunks of the city were being obliterated. The Havarthi might claim to be the rightful inheritors of the Ithonian mantle, but they were clearly unconcerned with damage to the ruins. Sabe doubted they had any interest in anything but the exile splinter. Sabe smirked. Or maybe Heartburner. The whole tower shuddered, and Sabe almost overbalanced, but she caught herself by sticking her shield to the nearest protruding tree branch. When she'd recovered, she let the shield's magical grip on the branch dissolve, and crouch-walked over towards the edge. Crouch-walking in wind armor was hard. The source of the explosions was, unsurprisingly, Talia and Alustin.
The two of them were somehow going spell for spell against an entire bombardment from the tower. Sabi swore she could hear Talia laughing, even from this distance. Not wanting to get accidentally hit by a stray spell, Sabi stepped back from the edge, in perfect time to avoid getting crushed beneath a massive flailing vine. Rather than dodge back, Sabi lunged forwards, affixing her shield to the massive vine, then letting it hurl her up into the air.
"Well, well, well," a voice said. "I thought I felt someone up here. Look who it is. Little Miss."
Sabi looked up from trying not to be thrown from the thrashing vine and spotted the vine whip-wielding sacred swordsman. She promptly ignored his obnoxious taunting, released her shield from the vine, and wind-jumped straight for him. He instinctively lurched backward, tripping on one of his own vines, but he also sent quite a few others grasping up from the roof to block her path. Sabi detonated the wind armor around her right arm, sending her shooting away from a particularly thorny vine, then latched onto another with her shield for just a moment, long enough to change her direction. She skidded to a halt on a tilted, protruding tree trunk, then launched herself immediately up into the air to dodge another vine sweeping at her from the side. Sabi needed to end this, and fast. Plant mages were definitely not a particularly good matchup for her, and she doubted she'd seen everything this particular swordsman could do. She detonated her wind armor again, but rather than looking for a more open path, she blasted straight towards the base of several vines. Based on the way they were moving, she suspected the mage had a lot more control of the tips of the vines than their bases. They slammed together just inches behind her feet as she shot between them and tumbled across the ground. More were already rising between her and the enemy swordsman. But rather than try to launch herself again, she set a windstrike towards the enemy mage. It struck him full on in the chest, sending him tumbling backwards, straight off the edge of the tower roof. Sabi smiled grimly as most of the writhing vines either collapsed or flailed wildly. But her smile almost immediately vanished as the swordsman rose above the edge of the roof again, borne aloft by two of his own vines.
"You really didn't think that was going to work, did you?" the swordsman asked. "Little flea, jumping around and thinking it can kill the dog on its own. You really have to."
The swordsman was interrupted by a mid-sized palace exploding behind him. The Havarthi whirled to look at it, and Sabi immediately wind-jumped straight at him. He only had a moment to gape at the colossal figure of Arta with his battle armor at full size before Sabe's shield adhered to his back, and both of them went hurtling off into the air. Sabi couldn't help but think that Arta's armor looked rather strange when constructed from pink and orange granite. The man's vine whip flailed wildly at Sabi, dripping fluids that she was certain were caustic. But it couldn't manage to break through her wind armor before the two of them slammed into the roof of a nearby palace. Sabi's wind armor absorbed most of the force of the impact for her, but the Havarthi struck the stone face first, with all her weight on top of him. He didn't so much crash as smear. Sabi staggered to her feet in time to see the 50-foot armored form of Arta slam his enormous hammer into the side of the living tower. It tore through vines and trees like a shark through minnows, and the whole tower began to creak and shake ominously. He wasn't known as Arta Wallbreaker for nothing, after all. As Arta reared back for another strike, ignoring the bombardment of spells striking him, Sabi felt the wind begin to rise, and the first raindrops began to fall.